Test 4. Section A. Now let's begin with the 8 short conversations.
11. I've been wondering what sort of clothes my husband and I are going to need for our visit. What's the weather usually like in your country in September?
It's not very pleasant, I'm sorry to say. Generally, there are more rainy days in September than in any other month, but at least it isn't very cold there then.
Question. What does the man say about September in his country? I hear that you liked the play last night. I suppose your wife felt the same way about it.
No. As a matter of fact, we left at the intermission.
Question. How did the man and his wife feel about the play? How much will it cost for my daughter and me to go to Washington?
It's $100 full fare for you and half fare for your daughter if she is under 12.
Fine. We'll all have one full and one half fare ticket, please.
Question. What is the total cost for both tickets? I didn't know you typed.
I can't. My mother gave me a typewriter, but I don't know what to do with it. A friend of mine has generally been typing my papers.
Question. Who typed the woman's paper?
I can't understand why Mary didn't at least telephone me.
She didn't tell you? She said she was sorry she couldn't come for dinner, but hoped to be able to next time she came to town.
Question. What did the man say about Mary? What would you do if you were in my place?
If Paul were my son, I'd just not worry about him. His science teacher is already giving him special help after school, you say, so I doubt he'll fail the course.
Question. What problem are these people discussing? How long have you been playing the violin?
I've been playing since I was 10, but I've only been a professional musician for the last 5 years. Before that, I was an insurance salesman.
Question. How does the man earn his living now?
I haven't seen Patrick for such a long time. What do you think he's doing these days?
I saw him on the street the other day, and he said he had moved to a new apartment on the other side of town.
Question. Where did the woman see Patrick? Now you'll hear two long conversations. Conversation 1. Tell me about yourself and your past experience.
For the past 3 years, I have been working in China East Airlines Corporation Limited. I am very tolerant of people and have been told that this is one of my strengths. I feel I have a lot to offer as a team member.
Why are you interested in this occupation?
It's always been my dream to be a stewardess. And I like traveling to different places.
What do you think is the chief characteristics for a stewardess?
Well, a stewardess should be friendly, courteous, patient, and treat passengers kindly and politely.
Do you get angry easily?
No, I know how to control my temper.
If a passenger had an accident, what would you do?
I would give him or her basic first aid and ask my partner to call for assistance at the same time.
If you are hired, when can you start work?
I can begin work right away because I'm out of work right now.
What are your salary expectations?
I really need more information about the job before we start to discuss salary. I'd like to postpone that discussion until later. Maybe you could tell me what is budgeted for the position and how your commission structure works.
Questions 19 to 21 are based on the conversation you have just heard. 19. Which statement about the woman's professional experience is not true? According to the interview, which word is not used to describe stewardess? 21. How can the woman begin to work right away? 2. I don't agree at all with people who say it is all nonsense. I think that at last it is beginning to be taken seriously as a proper science and not as some kind of fairground entertainment.
How did you start to become interested in graphology?
I've always been fascinated by people and what they are like, and then one day I was just looking at a book about different styles of handwriting, and I got to thinking that it must all mean something, because we all have a different and individual style of our own. So that's how I began.
What exactly is the connection between the way we write and the way we are?
If you think about it, our handwriting, and our doodling too, are all products of our brain, a kind of extension of ourselves on paper.
Now, I know that a number of European firms have used graphology to evaluate potential employees for some time now, but I believe it's catching on in America, too.
I'm now running my own San Francisco-based consultancy firm, which I started a decade ago. And now over 200 firms come to me for advice on would-be employees.
How does it work out, then? Do they show you samples of an applicant's handwriting?
Yes, most companies nowadays require their new job applicants to provide at least a one-page writing sample, which is then passed over to me for interpretation.
How long does it take you to analyze the sample?
Oh, anything from 3 to 8 hours, depending on the amount of detail required by the client.
Questions 22 to 25 are based on the conversation you have just heard. 22. How did the man become interested in graphology? 23. Which is the connection between the way we write and the way we are? 24. How long does it take the man to analyze a sample? 25. What's wrong with graphology from the passage?
1. There is one part of women's magazines that every man reads. It's the section where women, and increasingly men, write for advice on their emotional problems. The person who answers these letters usually has a very reassuring name, Aunt Mary, suggesting a gentle, middle-aged lady with a lot of wisdom and experience. However, at one time it was widely believed that the letters were in fact all made up by someone on the editorial staff, and that the Aunt Mary who provided the answers was a fat man with a beard, who drank like a fish, smoked like a chimney, and was unfaithful to his wife. Although this may be true in some cases, the majority of advice columns are genuine, and the advisory staffs are high-qualified people with a deep understanding of human problems. In the past, only the answers were published, not the letters themselves. Much of the fun in reading them lay in trying to figure out what problem on earth led to such peculiar answers. Nowadays, everything is much clearer. Questions of the most intimate kind are fully dealt with, and the columns have become more professional and more frank.
Questions 26 to 28 are based on the passage you have just heard. 26. At one time, who was generally believed to answer the reader's problems in women's magazines?
What fun made people enjoy reading the column?
28. What change has taken place in columns according to the passage? 2. Do you know how fruit ripens, especially after it has fallen from the tree or vine? The answer is simple. A single chemical called ethylene is produced by the fruit itself, and it is this chemical that causes the fruit to ripen. When the fruit produces increased amounts of ethylene, the ethylene affects the fruit physiologically. The fruit begins to breathe oxygen, and the oxygen supply in turn raises the internal temperature of the fruit. This increased internal temperature allows the ripening process to begin, with fruit becoming sweeter. Less green in color and softer, in short, delicious.
Questions 29 to 31 are based on the passage you have just heard. 29. What is the main topic of the talk? 30. What is the source of the ethylene described in the talk? 31. According to the speaker, when fruit breathes oxygen, what begins to happen? 3. A European Union peace mission has left Algeria. The departure came as 3 bombs killed 2 people and injured 28 in Algiers. There was no claim of responsibility for Thursday's bombing, but the police blamed Muslim extremist rebels. The European Union envoy spent 5 days in Algeria trying to come up with a plan for helping that country to end terrorist attacks against civilians. There was no indication of a breakthrough. The world has been horrified by a recent wave of civilian massacres in Algeria that claimed more than 1,200 lives.
Questions 32 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard. 32. Who has left Algeria? 33. How many casualties were there? 34. How long did the European Union envoy spend in Algeria? What's the attitude of the people toward the recent wave of civilian massacres? Section C. Urban life has always involved a balancing of opportunities and rewards against dangers and stress. Its motivating force is, in the broadest sense, money. Opportunities to make money mean competition, and competition is stressful. It is often at its most intense in the large cities, where opportunities are greatest. The presence of huge numbers of people inevitably involves more conflict, more traveling, the overloading of public services, and the exposure to these deviants and criminals who are drawn to the rich pickings of the great cities. Crime has always flourished in the relative anonymity of urban life, but today's ease of movement makes its control more difficult than ever. There is much evidence that its extent has a direct relationship to the size of the communities. City dwellers may become trapped in their homes by fear of crime around them. As a defense against these developments, city dwellers tend to use various strategies to try and reduce the pressures upon themselves. Contacts with other people are generally made brief and impersonal. Doors are kept locked. Telephone numbers may be ex-directory. Journeys outside the home are usually hurried rather than a source of pleasure. There are other strategies, too, which are positively harmful to the individual. For example, reducing awareness through drugs or alcohol. Furthermore, all these defensive forms of behavior are harmful to society in general. They cause widespread loneliness and destroy the communities concerned for its members. Lack of informal social contact and the indifference to the misfortunes of others are amongst the major causes of urban crime. Urban life has always involved a balancing of opportunities and rewards against dangers and stress. Its motivating force is, in the broadest sense, money. Opportunities to make money mean competition, and competition is stressful. It is often at its most intense in the large cities, where opportunities are greatest. The presence of huge numbers of people inevitably involves more conflict, more traveling, the overloading of public services, and the exposure to these deviants and criminals who are drawn to the rich pickings of the great cities. Crime has always flourished in the relative anonymity of urban life, but today's ease of movement makes its control more difficult than ever. There is much evidence that its extent has a direct relationship to the size of the communities. City dwellers may become trapped in their homes by fear of crime around them. As a defense against these developments, city dwellers tend to use various strategies to try and reduce the pressures upon themselves. Contacts with other people are generally made brief and impersonal. Doors are kept locked. Telephone numbers may be ex-directory. Journeys outside the home are usually hurried rather than a source of pleasure. There are other strategies, too, which are positively harmful to the individual. For example, reducing awareness through drugs or alcohol. Furthermore, all these defensive forms of behavior are harmful to society in general. They cause widespread loneliness and destroy the communities concerned for its members. Lack of informal social contact and the indifference to the misfortunes of others are amongst the major causes of urban crime. Urban life has always involved a balancing of opportunities and rewards against dangers and stress. Its motivating force is, in the broadest sense, money. Opportunities to make money mean competition, and competition is stressful. It is often at its most intense in the large cities, where opportunities are greatest. The presence of huge numbers of people inevitably involves more conflict, more traveling, the overloading of public services, and the exposure to these deviants and criminals who are drawn to the rich pickings of the great cities. Crime has always flourished in the relative anonymity of urban life, but today's ease of movement makes its control more difficult than ever. There is much evidence that its extent has a direct relationship to the size of the communities. City dwellers may become trapped in their homes by fear of crime around them. As a defense against these developments, city dwellers tend to use various strategies to try and reduce the pressures upon themselves. Contacts with other people are generally made brief and impersonal. Doors are kept locked. Telephone numbers may be ex-directory. Journeys outside the home are usually hurried rather than a source of pleasure. There are other strategies, too, which are positively harmful to the individual. For example, reducing awareness through drugs or alcohol. Furthermore, all these defensive forms of behavior are harmful to society in general. They cause widespread loneliness and destroy the communities concerned for its members. Lack of informal social contact and the indifference to the misfortunes of others are amongst the major causes of urban crime.